really got me off to a good start here. Can I just say that? Morning, everybody. It's Matt Bobal here with you on 720 WGN. John Hanson, Esmeralda, Leon, and Patty are still here in the studio. Oh, you're not? I'm sorry. It sounded like you were.
Nope.
Esmeralda's giving me...
Esmeralda and I have been hanging out for like 3 hours in the
Esmeralda's giving me advice on how to have a really bad show, which I don't think is how you should go into it.
Tax returns is a good one.
Are you doing your tax returns?
Right.
And then don't do a monologue. Don't sing the tree time commercial.
No. You said...
We could talk about the weather for a little bit.
It was the other way around. And I said, then do your taxes.
Yeah.
Do your taxes on air. Then that would be a bad show.
And yet you suggested that. That's what you just said.
For a bad show. But you're not going to do a bad show. So
Esmeralda has a lot of suggestions about a bad show.
If it was going to be a bad show, here's what it would be.
Yeah. Exactly.
Just don't do that.
Exactly.
Do the opposite of your taxes on the air.
Do the opposite of your taxes.
What is the opposite of your taxes on the air?
The show you're going to have.
Getting your returns.
Oh,
so
get
you just
money.
Open the envelope, and then that's and then you give it to listeners.
There we go.
312-981-7200.
Let's see what we got.
Be ripping money.
Owe them money.
It's kind of a gloomy day out here, Matt Bubala.
You know what? I was in Portland this week for 2 days. This was what it was the entire time.
So you're used to this.
Can we give you the intro that we love to give you when you're gone?
Please do.
And here is Matt Bubala.
But if I was gone, you wouldn't give me that anymore.
No, we would not. We would tell it to you to your back or to your radio back.
We go that we're filling in
for Matt Bubala.
You two are the greatest odd couple I know.
We are weird.
Why are we odd?
I don't know.
Well,
we're not polar opposites.
No, you're just being odd.
No, we're just always odd. It's fine. You got a fun show tonight, Matt?
Oh, it's going to be so much fun.
Yeah.
Well, now that we got the tax return part out of the way.
No, that's the opposite.
Right.
The opposite,
exactly.
Which is your show.
We're getting money.
Right.
You're going to give money away?
Everyone's getting their tax return.
No, I am not. I am not. No. That's not what's going to happen here tonight, Esmeralda.
No, I think it's going to be a good show.
Can you feel it, John?
I can feel the energy. It's a foggy night. It's almost like a London night outside.
Well, you know, we've got... Wait a minute. When is the thing? Is the Magnificent Mile Lights Parade must be tonight.
Tomorrow.
Festival
or
of
tonight.
Tonight.
Excuse me. Tonight.
Tonight, John.
You're right. You're right.
They
tonight.
Have it all set up around here with bleachers and all that good stuff.
Mickey and Minnie Mouse. Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse. I almost said Mickey and Minnie Mouse. They're not married. I was doing a segment for
name.
I was doing a segment for WCIU,
mm-hmm.
and they reminded me that it's not Mickey and Minnie Mouse. It's
Mickey
Mouse
and
Minnie
Mouse. Okay, so then, but I always thought that Mickey and Minnie were sort of linked. Like, we're sort of like courting, right?
You know what? It's 2017.
Yeah. Anyone.
And, you know, they had their things.
Oh, you think it's they've separated?
Well, yeah, they probably, maybe. You know what? They're looking for other prospects.
Yeah. They're on Tinder. They're both on Tinder now. I saw Mickey on Tinder, and we didn't match.
It's too bad.
No, I know.
He's,
I know.
He's very
I know. But
high
I saw.
Energy.
But I saw Minnie on Bumble, and she was. We were matching pretty well.
You know, I understand under relationship on both their listings.
Don't
they
worry,
say
folks. The taxes
complicated.
Will be coming.
It's
complicated.
Complicated.
Is that what they say?
Well, for both of them.
But here's my question: so if you were told, listen, hey,
I was told directly.
You were told by Disney people.
Yes.
Right. So if it's Minnie Mouse and Mickey Mouse, they're not together.
Right.
But they did court, right? I mean, they're sort of, they have,
well,
they flirt, things like that.
Well, I'm sure they had a thing at some point.
Well, here's my question, though, Esmeralda. If they're not Mickey and Minnie Mouse, they're Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse.
It's just the same last name.
But then it sounds like they're related. And maybe
got a whole never met a Smith and a Smith? Come on.
Right.
I've never met a mouse and a mouse. You got to say
right,
that's a little
all
more
the
rare.
Mouse, that's a very common last name amongst mouses.
Mouses.
Is mouse.
Exactly.
But no, they're going to be kicking off the parade tomorrow at 5:30. Up at 900 North of Michigan, it'll be great. Just turn the lights out? I don't know. But yeah, they strictly told me. They were like, they are not. I had to rewrite all my scripts for the morning show, so I'll just
Why
say
are
that.
They so stickly about
they
that?
They were very stickly. And but the best part
is that
because
there was a breakup or just because they're
well, maybe it was a breakup, Esmeralda.
Wait, but were all your scripts like Mr. and Mrs. Mickey Mouse?
No. But I just written Mickey and Minnie Mouse because I'm a human and that's what I wrote, but I didn't know that it was a thing.
You
and
script
I,
out your stuff? It doesn't seem like you have scripts on anything. I'm dead serious.
Just
I didn't...
The,
I, No,
just
it
the
means
introductions
like,
to me.
Okay.
And then it's all hell breaks
And so
all
is
hell
that cue-carded or teleprompted, or you just memorize
no,
it
No, no,
all?
No. So what I do is I script out what the hosts, Felicia Jordan or Danielle, will send to me.
Ah.
And then it's all hell breaks loose, as I say. I mean, like, who knows what I'll say after
so
that.
So you script that just so you know.
Just the intro. So exactly. They know what to toss to me, and then it's who knows what happens.
So but, do they do anything on their own, or they just read words handed in front of them?
I will not say a
pretty
word.
Much.
No, they're great.
They just
they're
stand
wonderful.
There, read the card,
the
and then.
The jam, WCIU. No, they're great. But no. Beyond that, once they toss to me, it's all who knows what happens.
Then it's whatever.
But,
right.
But I had to check. I had to check that it was really. I sent a text to my producers. I was like, by the way, it's not Mickey Mouse and Minnie. It's not Mickey and Minnie Mouse. It's Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse.
Same
individually.
Last name, no relation.
Well, did they clarify that?
No, they didn't. They didn't. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm
who
saying.
Knows?
That's what I'm saying.
And by the
maybe
way,
they gotta
it's
do
his
a
birthday today.
DNA 23 thing. Whose birthday?
Mickey Mouse.
No way.
Yeah.
Is it Minnie Mouse's?
Steam, no.
No, that
no
they're not.
Steamboat Willie was released on this date.
Wow.
Back in 1928.
That's not appropriate, Roger. So.
Hello.
Roger. I love the fact that right now, because of the parade, I think if people wanted
you know,
to.
In today's climate, you really can't talk about Mickey and the Steamboat Willie incident.
No, you've got to be really open about it. You've got to be.
There was a thing, yes. And Mickey said, hey, I'm sorry. There was a full investigation.
Right, no, exactly.
And
you're right.
He didn't resign. It was all
open.
It all worked
open.
Out.
Yeah. He was honest about it.
Willie said he didn't want Mickey to resign.
No. I agree.
He was happy that he apologized
right.
about what happened.
Mm-hmm. No, it's 2017.
Wait, so in other news, I
you
love...
You can't just Steamboat Willie.
Wait, Mr. Oh, okay. I love that you have a the stand over there
I have a
for
stand.
Fans to come sit.
Oh, yes. That's what it is.
Way.
That's what it is. They just put that up for the show, for
there's
the Matt Bubala show.
Yeah, for the Matt Bubala.
But what's great is because I'm a little like... I want to keep my distance from them.
Course.
I put them on the other side of Michigan Avenue.
Yeah,
I wouldn't want them to get too close.
Man, I got to say also, our listeners who have been paying attention through the afternoon, evening, and this morning.
And let's just
that,
commend if there's somebody that's been paying attention all the way through.
Esmeralda and I have not been on the air for 3.5 hours, so they can draw their own conclusions about the in-between time. But no, you get your crowd here. They're going to be lining up, and then we got
the
parade the kicking
on.
Off about 5:30.
When's the last time either of you went to the Magnificent Mile Lights Festival?
Never.
Parade?
I've never been.
You've never been?
Never
to?
Been.
Neither
like
of you,
crowds.
Esmeralda?
I don't. We
well,
both of us don't like crowds.
Let me just say that if you don't like crowds, not the place for you
no,
to be.
I've heard.
Well, no, I'll just be in here.
Yeah.
And right. Watch from here. That would probably be the best.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna.
Yeah.
No,
I have other.
She won't.
That
I'm
would
actually,
be the place to go.
I have plan. I'm going to the park.
Yeah.
I'm going to Starved Rock.
Which park?
To the park.
Starved Rock.
You know
Rock
it's like
on...
December, right?
Yeah, but this is the best time because there's no bugs.
So you'd that's rather go Marilla. Freeze to death than have to swat a bug.
Just a lot
no,
of moldy leaves.
Roger, what's the temperature tomorrow?
It's going to drop down in the afternoon to about 39, winds 40 miles an hour, so your wind chill should be
yeah,
about 20.
40 miles an
no,
hour?
No,
yeah.
Not 39.
Yes. 39 with 40 yes. mile an hour wind.
Oh, wait, what, when are you going?
Like
Sat today or Sunday?
Today.
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 Yeah.
I know that we've already reached our high temperature.
By
today.
4 o'clock, the temperature, a front's coming through, and it's supposed to drop down to about 39.
Okay,
but you know
what about Starved Rock?
It's farther 84 inland,
no,
so it's going to be colder.
No,
it's going to be colder.
It's south. It's south
yeah,
of
it's
Iceland.
Not that much
it's
south. Under the equator somewhere down there.
It's going to be
and they don't have wind at Starved Rock because it's a big
the
rock.
Illinois
and it blocks
equator?
The wind.
Why are you going to Starved Rock?
Because there's no bugs.
Because
there's
I
no bugs.
Enjoy no, I enjoy going
moldy
to
leaves.
Nature when there's no bugs, which is pretty much like fall, winter.
But just be careful; it's going to be slippery.
Time when there's
so
no bugs
don't be climbing.
Or people that want to be there.
She wants to be alone.
Yeah,
actually, yeah, that's why I go to the
getting
beach.
Getting back to
too.
Nature.
Are you going to the beach?
I mean, I'm not like dipping my toes in. I just go look at it and then leave.
I just watch the icicles form on the shore.
Yeah. Are you really going to Starved Rock today? What are you doing?
Walk around.
That's so silly. It's going to be 40 mile an hour winds.
I have a coat. Not.
Yes. You have a coat.
You know what? I honestly do not believe it's going to be 40 mile hour winds.
The wind gusts are up to 40 miles an hour when the front comes through.
But that's the city of Chicago?
No, that's the entire Midwest area, Illinois, northern central Illinois.
Does Roger miss around?
She's doubting you, Roger. Ugh. Doubting you.
I don't know.
Unless you have a coat like when Luke Skywalker climbed into that animal with the lightsaber.
There you
then
go.
Then you are
that
not going to
be
in good shape.
That's a, yeah, that's a tauntaun. I actually have
he
a
was
tauntaun
on the,
coat.
He was on the ice
fur?
Planet of Hoth.
She got Hoth
with all the innards.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's just going to find a deer down there, carve it up, climb right in. Warm
well,
no, on up.
I'm going to wear it as a cape.
They're in season, you know.
They very much are.
Yeah. There's a huge population.
Grizzly to
it'll be
crawl
fine.
Inside. You and Colin could both fit in a grizzly. That'd
maybe
be
a
fun,
bobcat.
Huh? Well, yeah, I got a bobcat. No, Esmeralda's got terrible plans today. It's the worst.
Yeah,
I'm going to watch.
What are you going to be doing, John?
No one will be there.
He's going to be watching the winds.
You'll be alone.
I'll
in
be
your
watching
misery,
the winds. Yes. No, I'll be watching on TV. They got it on TV somewhere, right?
The Magnificent Mallards.
Yeah.
I think it's
on the ABC.
Sort of...
I think it's on ABC.
Yeah.
And then we're covering it on GN Radio, so I think it'll be great. I don't know. But either way, I won't be outside. I will not be inside a bear with my boyfriend watching a parade go by.
We're going to be cozy and watching the parade on TV.
Yeah, okay.
A wisp of jealousy
in
the
a
air when you said that, John.
Yeah, I know. You're right. You caught it. I didn't think you caught it, but you caught it, man.
Yeah. Yeah. He longs for a night with his boyfriend inside a tauntaun.
Oh, God. Just my dreams. That's what every romance novel
gooey
is.
Gooey and bloody. It's going to be great.
Oh, man.
Good Lord.
I won't even say what I was going to say. Prom night all over again, folks. All right.
I thought you were going to say wait till the tauntaun gets
there. I think you have to break, Mapabala.
Oh, no, that's not how this works. That's
no, okay, okay, we're wide open. Cool. Well,
this ain't the download, honey.
That's great. Cool.
I like how the real show happens after Esmeralda and I have been off the air for 3 hours, and then they bring us back on.
Well, you sit there and drink for 3 hours, well, good things start happening.
We didn't.
No,
we were
tea. Post-show meeting.
What's the bottle you've been walking around with in here? I just saw you cradling
tea?
Like a newborn baby.
Long
yeah,
Island iced tea.
Post-show
yeah.
meeting. We've been
iced
having a
tea.
Post-show breakdown of everything that happened on the download tonight. It
was
a great show.
How is the jam going? I always see you're always looking for people to raid their fridges, move their couches.
I know. I love what I do on
Have
the
you
gym.
Had a cheerleader outfit on lately?
Oh, my gosh. Yes, too many. I've been at Homewood Flossmore, put the cheerleader outfit on.
Nice.
Wendell Phillips Academy, cheered along with them.
Is it the same outfit, or do they have to provide you
different
one
ones? Different ones. I got to clean that really, really strictly. But
well,
no,
I know,
I was,
but I didn't notice every school have, you know,
no,
how tall are you? You're almost 6 feet tall,
yeah,
right?
Almost 6 feet, about 5'11".
So
11.
They don't have a lot of cheerleader uniforms ready for the 6 feet.
I'll tell you a funny story. Last year I was on with Maine
cheer.
South, and we went with the Red Hawks, and we did a
sure.
cheer, and it was a full dress down to my knees, and then we had a top on. You know those tights, the tight cheerleader
tops. Their cheerleaders
tops.
Wear dresses down to their knees?
No, excuse me, skirts down to their knees, and then they have a separate top. They have a two-piece.
Okay.
And the top is very, it's like kind of that thick fabric that kind of
like
comes
a
over.
Woolly
the, yeah, it's very woolly.
Okay.
And I had to put it on underneath the bleachers because where else are you going to change on live TV or right before the TV? No, we
in the van?
There was no, we don't have a van. We have TV. We have cars. We do it all on cell phone technology. So I went under the bleachers. I threw it on really quickly. And it was in August. So the temperature was about 89 degrees. And we do the cheer and we do this, all this thing. The cheerleaders go back to the school. And one of the cheer dads is like, all right, let's go ahead and get this off. And we couldn't, it was so sweaty. I couldn't get it off. So the cheer dad cut me out of it.
Oh my God, seriously?
He went to the athletic department, got scissors, and cut me out of a cheerleader's dress.
Didn't that destroy the cheerleader's dress?
And
or did he think at that point, well, we'll never use this one again, so let's just.
Matt Bubala, that is on my Emmy reel, of which I am nominated for an Emmy. And
you won an Emmy last year, didn't you?
No, I'm nominated this
year. Oh, you're
nominated. My first time.
Sir.
But that is on my reel, the time I was cut out of a cheerleader's
did
dress.
Did they videotape that?
No, they did not videotape that part of it.
Why did they miss the good parts?
Well, I mean, that wasn't on live TV, and I hadn't thought of the social media aspects of it. I hadn't thought of an Instagram story of me being cut out of a Maine South Red Hawks cheerleader outfit. But if I would have, that would have been great.
Can you reenact it?
Oh, I can reenact it for you, Roger, anytime
you
want.
That's the Facebook story that you do afterwards.
It's funny because that story is like, you know, you could tell that story and be like, yeah, that was on morning TV, or that story and that's how I got kicked out of high school.
It's the same thing. No, really.
Yeah. If you're a student, you're gone.
The number
if you're a morning TV host, there's my story of how
hilarious.
I got an Emmy.
The number of times I've actually changed underneath bleachers far outweighs the any time I ever in high school did anything nefarious under the bleachers. I mean, we put on so many different cheerleader outfits, marching band outfits, and every single time I'm like, is this appropriate to be doing underneath the bleachers? But
I, for one, think they're amazing. You have some moves.
Well, I appreciate that, Esmeralda. I really do.
You got some amazing cheerleading moves.
I appreciate that.
From someone who never cheerleaded.
No, I never did.
Amazing
you
cheerleading
did?
Moves.
No, I never did, Roger.
I did.
Oh, I know you did, and you were in the marching band of the color guard too, Roger.
Right, I cheerleaded at SIU.
Yeah,
I was the very first. There were three of us, first male cheerleaders.
It shows.
Did you do flips?
huh? shows.
No, we had burgundy sweaters, really sweaty sweaters, and
right.
white pants that showed every smudge every... and stuff, mm-hmm. and then white gym shoes, and yeah.
It, do you have any pictures, Roger?
Unfortunately, no, though I have tried to research for the newspapers at Southern to see if there were any pictures. There may still be.
You go through the microfiche to try and find them? How are those tax returns coming, man?
Yeah,
get them
time.
All settled. Looks like that's going to be a good segment coming up here pretty soon.
How many deductions?
Well, we got the four children. You got the house.
No, but I do appreciate, you know, honestly, we were talking earlier with the Chicago School Academy for the Arts. We had an amazing guest on earlier. And
Jason Patera.
Yeah, just a bit. Jason Patera. And one thing I will say is that through WCIU and all this stuff, one thing I've been really blessed with, yesterday morning I was at Bernard Zell playing with their jazz band. It's 6th, 7th, and 8th graders, a jazz band and a choir. The one cool thing I get to do, I mean, many cool things, but the real cool thing is it. Get to experience with these students the arts. It's something that's very overlooked. Like, we give our high school football teams, we give our basketball teams so much praise and love. But one of my favorite things to do is every single morning that we can, we get out to these schools, these high schools, these elementary schools, and practice with their bands, their choirs, their cheerleaders, their performers. And it's just a really cool moment. I don't know. It really – I was in plays growing up in high school and grade school. I was in the orchestra, choir, all that sort of stuff. So it's cool to actually live it out as an adult and show them off.
Well, I saw on your Facebook page you playing My Heart Will Go On.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was a random
the boy
jam.
Who just jumped on the drums.
We were
and
in commercial break and I sat down at the piano and I was like, well, I know this song. I'll just start kind of dinging along on it on the piano. My Heart Will Go On from Titanic, Celine Dion. And all of a sudden this sixth grader walks in, Sam, and he sits down at the drums and he kind of starts playing on the hi-hat a little bit and then he gets the bass and the snare. And
was
and
he
like,
just playing with you or did he know the song?
He just, well, because
he's young, so he might not even know
along,
that song, right?
Just playing along.
It sounded really good.
Yeah. It was so cool. It was a really awesome moment in a commercial break. Break where me and this sixth grader could connect in a musical way. And really, like, I mean, this awesome school on the north side of Chicago being able to foster this environment where all these kids can perform. And every single week, the Jam and WCIU, we get to go to all these schools and get to see all these kids. And again, like I said, the arts are undervalued in all of our school, whether it's CPS, whether it's private, whether it's suburban. Mm-hmm. And to be able to perform with them and show them off and give them their moment in the light, in the sun, is I honestly think it's like the best part of my job. It like makes me glow and really happy. And like every week I'm like, oh, you guys are so great. And I like start crying and they think they're like, okay, we get it, John from the Jam. But it's really a really cool moment. And I take a lot of pride in that. So
I got a suggestion for another one for you.
Okay.
I'm good friends with the lady who runs the Steel Band.
Oh, yeah.
The Steel Drum Band over at Clemente High School.
Clemente over at Division and
Western.
Yeah, for sure. We'll reach out
I'll
to
hook
them.
You up.
I did Steel Drum Band when I was in high school.
Really?
One of the few in Downers Grove South. We had Dwayne Rawl was our percussion
instructor. Fantastic.
I would love to do steel drum. I did a lot of stuff. I was a big high school everything. All
nerd.
Arts. I know. I was a real nerd. But really, like,
Esmeralda.
To be able to show... I know, but, I mean, Esmeralda said it, so do my brothers, so do most my parents.
The kids
but,
that shoved me in the lockers, they were all saying it.
They all were saying it. But to be able to show those kids off... And things have changed so much, the landscape has.
You know, nerd's a good word.
Nerd's a good word now. And to be able to show off those kids... I mean, the arts, I mean, it makes you who you are in many ways. So does sports, so does teamwork and all
well,
that
look,
activity.
Honestly, we are all nerds.
Yeah.
Well,
all of us here.
Look where
sure.
we are. We're in front of microphones.
I mean, look at
Matt
Bubala. He's
them.
Wearing a Pac-Man shirt today.
Yeah. No, we're
Bubala
all big old nerds.
Nerd.
Big nerds.
How are those tax returns coming, man?
Yeah, do you figure
you figure
that
out?
Well, we got the four children. We got the house. Got a car loan. I don't know. Is it,
by the way,
any
know,
deductions?
The
donations?
The triplets are born.
Still donations. Not a
there
lot. I'm
kind
of stingy.
The triplets and I share a birthday. I don't know if you all know that.
We do know that because we met you in the bleachers at the Cubs game like 2 years ago.
I was about in the same sort of state that I am.
How old are your...
Let's see where.
How old
are the triplets turned 12 this past summer on July 27th, John Hansen's birthday.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. 12?
Yeah. They turned 12. What'd you turn?
33.
Are you only 33?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I just turned 33.
Are you serious?
Well, 33 in July,
Brother is younger than I am.
Were you at South when I was teaching at North?
Yeah, you were WDGC, Roger. We've talked about
that's right. It's been a while since we talked.
We've heard your story, Roger.
We talked about it 3 hours ago, Roger.
We talked about an hour and 15 minutes ago. I brought you the script to the...
oh,
that's right. No, we weren't talking politics then.
Literally just talking to you, Roger. Roger introduced me to WGN. Now, the first time I was on WGN as a news anchor was Roger training me up in the room up there. Mm-hmm. We talked about that. He forgot. It's fine. You got a punk there. Are you catching up, Matt?
Yeah. Well, I'm
just going to read it while we're talking. Yeah, well, no, we'll take over and then you just read that book and we'll be fine. How old are your... Wait, so your triplets are 12.
Yes, John's 33.
How old did you think I was, Matt?
What? I'm going to feel bad here, but I thought you were older, John.
I got gray hair.
I thought you were closer to 40.
Okay.
A seasoned man.
I'm impressed.
How old did you think I was?
I don't know.
16.
12.
12.
He's like, why are you here? Shouldn't you be in bed?
Shouldn't you be in bed?
You should.
I thought I saw you
in
my
John
triplet
school. Drinking
in
there. Because you're 12. So
literally pouring a
drink. What are your babies? Girls, boys? What's the...
So our oldest, Jack, is 16. And then we have two boys and a girl out of the triplets.
Oh my gosh. Do they all look alike? Is it crazy?
No.
Could they switch around and do hijinks?
No.
No.
No, not even close.
Yeah. They're adorable, though. Good kids. You've done good work.
Oh, my gosh. Can you not...
From my
recollection. For the 4 seconds and you're drunk and you met him underneath the bleachers.
Are you just regretting?
Again, John, underneath the bleachers, drunk.
Oh, wow. Are you regretting the day that they're like 16? Oh, my God.
Well, the one is 16 and yeah, it's serious health.
Yeah, but, you know, you're going to have triplets that are 16. Yeah.
Yes.
Do you got to buy four
cars? Good luck,
cars,
Matt Bubala.
Hell no.
No.
One of them will get to drive, I think. Tommy will get to drive.
Just get a minivan and then tell him to share.
Oh, I've got plenty of minivans. Thank you.
But that's the thing.
Well,
give
we're on our
minivan.
Second one now. We just got rid of the one that we bought while they were in the hospital when they were born.
Okay.
That finally cracked
No, but that's what you do. Give them the minivan.
Right.
They'll never want to drive a minivan.
My parents gave
me. Do you remember
me
being 16?
Yeah.
I had an
89. Did you turn down a lot of cars at 16?
Anything with four wheels.
Sorry, nothing good enough for me.
Well, no, we never had a minivan because we never had enough. It's me and a brother.
But was there any car you were going to say no to at 16?
Well, no.
I don't want to drive that.
I had the minivan.
My dad
and I took
gave
it.
Me what I actually wanted. Which
he pulled
is...
around beneath the bleachers and.
My dad got me a Volkswagen, 89 Volkswagen Cabriolet. It was adorable.
God.
It was adorable.
Right.
Well, somebody had a nice teenage life, didn't they?
Yeah, an 89.
Wow. What year was it?
It's an 89.
I know, but what year was it when you got it?
99?
Roger, you know how I tease you for being the librarian sometimes, just looking stuff up on the air?
Yeah.
So I'm 34 now.
Yeah.
You're older than Jeff.
So yeah. Yeah, you are.
I would have thought you were younger than
so. Nine, really?
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
I thought you were in your 20s. I thought John was in your
40s. It's
my gray
hair.
20s.
It's because I have very round cheeks. I think I'm kind of like a very large baby.
I think Esmeralda looks young.
No, you look young.
Yeah, because of my large. Because
no, it's because you got good skin. You got no wrinkles.
Yes.
Right. I have very oily skin.
I thought you were in your 20s, to be honest.
It's say olive.
Yeah, no. But oily skin actually helps deter wrinkles. Because your skin is oily, so the wrinkles don't. If you have very dry skin, those wrinkles just settle in like it's nobody's business.
Yeah.
Oily though,
right?
You look like
this is a Neutrogena
baby cherub.
Commercial.
Don't worry, everybody. The taxes will still come. Stick around.
Yeah, no, he's going to give
the
you
good
tips
stuff still coming
on whether you have to say zero or one.
I'm going under the bleachers. Bye.
Speaking of train wrecks, coming up next, Ed Derrick, the final mission of Extortion 17. The deadliest day of the U.S. war in Afghanistan.
That's wow, that's
next.
A transition. Wow. Matt. Whoa. That's a 180.
Okay.
All the way around.
And then we'll lighten it up with the taxes right after that.
Well, speaking
perfect.
Of school.
Oh, please.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
We're going to learn some stuff.
Oh, that was the transition
made
there.
See
man,
that?
I can't even keep up with that.
Come on, man. Come on, Matt Bubala.
All right, John Hanson, Esmeralda Leon. You guys on again over what you were talking
about? We're on
earlier.
Thanksgiving Day.
Thanksgiving Day.
For all your wholesome entertainment, noon to 3.
Noon to
we're
three.
On next Friday for Patty.
Yeah.
For pretty late.
11 to 2.
Oh, well,
and then a little bunch of stuff.
Again the next Friday.
Yeah, we'll talk to you next Friday.
And then I'll be on.
Way more.
I'll also be on just doing traffic.
Yeah.
You'll do your regular job as well.
Yes. Right.
Okay, good for you. All right.
And I'm on the U every morning, 6 to 8. So.
6 to 8 a.m. Yeah. Always on location? Are you ever get to be in the studio?
Sometimes when one of the hosts is out, I get to jump on in. I think Tuesday I'll be in the studio,
but otherwise you got to be out somewhere.
I love him out of studio.
I love being out.
Honestly, I think that's what they say.
Because he just wanders and just does insane things.
The further away I am, the better. Like they send me to Libertyville as many times as they can.
As far as the cell phone technology will carry.
Like, you want to go to Mokina? I'll go to Mokina. Yeah,
you're going to Rockford. They're just like, we don't get a signal there, but
go to Star Rock on Monday, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be
40 mile an hour winds.
No bugs. No bugs.
All right,
I'm late for the news.
Have
and Ed's waiting to tell me about people dying, so thank you, John and Esmeralda, for hanging out. We'll get to Roger in the news after we cleanse our palates next. Ed Derrick is on hold after the news. The final mission of Extortion 17, the deadliest day in Afghanistan for the U.S. forces so far. It's an amazing story, very in-depth about the people who lost their lives, but also about the military operations and what goes on over there. It's a thrilling read and a terrible read because of what happens. But it's important, I think, that we don't just read the headlines on social media about what happens. And quite honestly, with the last year and a half here in America, I feel like we pay so little attention right now to what goes on overseas and with the fight on terror because we've got so much else consuming our minds. So this will be good to get into. Right after we check the headlines upstairs, there's Roger Badish. Morning, everybody. Matt Bubala with you here on 720 WGN. Thanks for staying up later with us. Ed Derrick is on the phone. The book is The Final Mission of Extortion 17, Special Ops, Helicopter Support, SEAL Team 6, and the Deadliest Day of the U.S. War in Afghanistan. Hey, Ed, thanks very much for staying up a little late with us tonight. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I've been reading the book. I didn't get through all of it. I will go back and read this after we're done because it's a fascinating read. And I know you take great care to get into details about the members who suffered through this day. And what I've really been reading about so far is just the incredible complexity of these missions. And that's something that I think we take for granted. I mean, I would guess, Ed, for most of us, we've seen maybe Black Hawk Down or we've seen Zero Dark 30, and that's kind of our knowledge of what goes on as far as helicopter flying and missions in the current theater of war that we are with the war on terror. But you're writing about things in here about the complexities, not only of the helicopters and the missions, but how they work and how they work within the structure of command within our armed forces. Talk to me just a little bit to set it up about how these operations generally run and how maybe it's different than in previous wars that from, say, way back when with Vietnam, because we use these special operational forces so often now to really get I don't want to say the dirty work, but a lot of the most important work, you know, going in and taking out leaders of the Taliban or Al-Qaeda or whoever it is, it seems like we rely very heavily on those special forces to take out the leaders of a lot of these groups now. Is that fairly accurate?
Yeah, exactly. It's very well stated. The difference from decades past is that there are many more facets to the overall operation, and each facet is much more highly refined just through time. There's a lot of technical intelligence gathering capabilities. There's just so much more to it. There's a lot of training. There's a lot of interoperability between the services or among the services. And one of the important facts that people don't really realize is that conventional forces work much more hand in hand in modern times than with special operations forces. And previously, they used to be somewhat insular. They work together very much hand in hand these days, as I explained in the book.
And it didn't exactly start out that way, though, right? I mean, one of the people you were quoting in here had talked about when he had come back to Afghanistan on a later tour that it was working better, that for a while there were some problems with the special forces were coming in and doing things while the regular forces were trying to build coalitions within towns and things like that, and sometimes the two wouldn't jive together very well.
Exactly. That's exactly how it went. And now it's much more smooth. I think a good way to look at it is back in the back in the World War II, where you had a very parochial setup because you had the army running, not only the army itself at commanding, and the Navy running itself at commanding, and so then you get people vying for who's going to take charge in this theater. whereas after the Goldwaters Nichols Department of Defense Reorganization Act of 1986, not to get too technical, but it took the service chiefs, and they just were in charge of training and equipping and organizing their services. And then you had these individual entities like CENTCOM, SOUTHCOM, and they were headed by chiefs of those specific geographic areas, and they ran the war. So things are much more fluidly integrated these days. So there's much less infighting. And now with Special Operations Forces, which U.S. Special Operations Command, and then conventional forces, that there was some friction, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, mid-2000s. But by now, just like the different services were working together more smoothly, now those two service types are working together more smoothly. And it just continues to get better every day.
Well, and I imagine another issue here is that, you know, you mentioned, like, say, in World War II, here's how it worked. But this war on terror is really a war on ideology. And while maybe World War II was also a war on ideology, we knew where the Germans were. And there were huge groups of them. And
yeah,
we could plan out an attack. And now with the war on terror, it's so, you know, who are they? Where are they? It's not groups of thousands of troops together. It's little pockets. And that's, I imagine, why you need the special forces. And I imagine for the regular forces, for the Army and the people that are on the ground there all the time, it's got to be so different because they're not there necessarily fighting an enemy. They're trying to build and give the opportunity for democracy to start flourishing in a place where that has been oppressed. It must be just very different. I imagine a lot of these generals that have been around a long time are relearning everything that they once knew about how they wanted to fight wars.
Well, I don't know about the generals relearning stuff, but you're exactly right in terms of the evolution of the way we fight wars, where it goes against a specific nation to where it's an ideology. Where it's a nation, you have everybody's geographically in the same area with an ideology. It's just, you know, can be anywhere. And that's why intelligence gathering is so important and vetting of intelligence and processing of intelligence. And I get into that in the book as well. And it's just, like I said before, it's just so refined. You have to be able to first identify who is the enemy. Where are they? And then that's when you can go after him. But you can't just go to a country and say everybody here is the enemy. That's not the case, just like you said.
Let's talk a little bit about Extortion 1-6 and Extortion 1-7. These groups that go in and do exfills and infills that get people in, get people out, or go after targets. The main story of the book, what happened on August 6, 2011, is the tragedy that happened with Extortion 1-7. But
yeah,
you tell other stories about you know, this is their job. This is what they do all the time. And it's harrowing because mostly these flights are at night, right? Because they've got to go in under cover of darkness. And that alone, I think we take for granted how difficult that truly is for the pilots and the forces that then hit the ground.
Yeah, I just like to say for all the people listening, I say this book is a story of stories. It's all bound together by the one incident that's tragedy. You know, it's a story of the individual pilots, the crew, the helicopter, what this operation was, how it was going on that night and then early morning. And also, like you explained, the difficulty in flying these missions because they're flying on night vision goggles, which you only have a 40-degree field of view, where during the day with your bare eyes, you've got 180 degrees, and you're seeing in shades of green. And you're flying, you know, these missions that you have to be on the ground within a window of just seconds. And the crew and the pilots have to operate fluidly and operate fluidly with the passengers. It's an incredible orchestration. And in incredibly dangerous areas. It's really phenomenal what these people go through. And it was, you know, to do these jobs. And I really got into all that in the book, is, you know, like you said.
Yeah, it's incredibly detailed and tells the story, the human side of these guys too, and women, because we don't think about that a lot. And, you know, I guess we do when we hear the tragedies that happen. But you know, I just feel like also in the last couple of years, the war on terror rages on and we become so numb to it. We don't hear about it as much. We don't think about it as much unless there's a big terrorist attack. And this is the work that's still going on every day in places across the Middle East and Afghanistan and Pakistan and other places.
Every day, and we'll never hear about it.
Yeah.
You know, because it's secret.
So is this the type of mission that if it hadn't gone wrong, we would never even know about? Is this just one of so many different missions that they're doing all the time that are basically top secret for a certain amount of years, and we'll hear about them down the road when stories are told many years from now?
Yeah, if that, I mean, a lot of stuff's classified for 25 years, I believe. And if it, you know, these raids happen all the time, and they happened all the time during Operation Enduring Freedom. And just like you said, we know about it because of the tragedy. And so that's, if you can say there's a good thing about this tragedy, that's it, because it brings it to light, and it brings the people who perform these jobs to light, and the types of missions and what they were doing. And that's, I think that's important for the American public to know, because people just don't really get how, you know, less than 1% of the population is in the military. And I've never been in the military. I've been very fortunate to have been embedded with Marines primarily, but other services in Afghanistan 4 times and Iraq twice. So I could see it up close, but it's so much more complex and so much more dangerous than I think a lot of people realize. And these stories of tragedy, like I said, if you could, you know, say a good thing about it, is that it provides a window of opportunity for understanding for the general public.
Yeah. I don't want to get political at all with this question, but I do wonder, because here in the U.S., those of us that aren't in the military, we have the great luxury of being able to debate what we should and shouldn't be doing in all these theaters. But there, they're getting orders and they're following them, and they're incredible about it. Do from all the forces that you've met over the years, do they talk much about whether they're happy or not? Because it's got to be frustrating that they're running these missions all the time. They're doing these things all the time. They're trying to cut the head off the snake, and that person's always replaced. And it seems like, I wonder if to them they feel like they're getting somewhere because they get through this, or they feel like now there's another person they have to go, and eventually bad things happen. You know, we have tragedies because that's just the nature of what's happening. What's the morale of the forces that you meet with and interview over the years?
Tremendously high. Everybody I've always met and been with in the field and back home talking about is very high, and they do feel that they're making progress. It's hard to gauge progress because it's hard to know what disasters like 9/11 have been prevented had we done nothing.
Yeah.
And I think that these terrorist networks are look at ISIS. I mean, you don't see too many ISIS beheading videos anymore. They're on the run. They're getting destroyed big time. You just don't hear about it. There's no embedded media. There's no news on it, but they're getting wiped out. They're wiped out big time. Al-Qaeda, Taliban. There's a lot of it too that is behind the scenes with the military working with the State Department, because a lot of these entities like the Taliban, they are supported by not countries but entities within countries like Pakistan. So there's a lot of, you know, also the money supplies. So there's a lot going on that we just don't know about. And there's a lot of, just like we don't know about these missions that, like you said, unless there's a tragedy. We just don't know about all the successes, and there's lots of them. There's a lot of them. So
I imagine there's tons of successes every single day.
And yeah, there is. It's just, we don't see it like, you know, like Victory at Sea back in World War II with like these giant battles with these sinking battleships. You just don't get that anymore. So
yeah, this war is won by a million little victories instead of a few big victories, I guess, right?
That is extremely well said. That is so well said. Absolutely. Absolutely. And with that, and that's the thing, we don't really know, because they're so small, little victories. We just don't know about them, but we don't see these, you know, spectacular 9/11 events. You know, we just saw those just one time. So,
Ed Derrick is with us. The book is The Final Mission of Extortion 1-7. I have to take a quick break, and we have to do the news. Can you hang on just a little bit more? Because I'd love to get in a little bit more about how these operations work and have you tell a little bit of the story of what happened that night to Extortion 1-7. Can you hang on for a couple minutes, Ed?
Of course. Thank you very much. Sure.
Ed Derrick is with us. The book, again, The Final Mission of Extortion 1-7, Special Ops Helicopter Support SEAL Team 6, and the Deadliest Day of the U.S. War in Afghanistan. This happened not long after they got Osama bin Laden, and members of the SEAL Team 6 that were there that night were there this night, and we'll get into that more after we check the news next. Dave, Brian, Pat, Alex, and Spencer learned of their mission for the August 5th-6th period of darkness in the early evening of August 5th, 2011. along with pilot CW4 Rick Arnold and CW2 Jeremy Collins, door gunner Sergeant John Brooks and FE Sergeant John Itwali and Staff Sergeant Brandon Robinson. They would launch a two-ship mission carrying a strike force of Team Darby Rangers into the heart of the Tangi Valley. After a series of briefings, including one with Nighthawk planners, the strike force, consisting of four squads of Team Darby Rangers, a JTAC from the 24th Special Tactics Squadron, a cultural support team member, and a military working dog, 48 passengers total, loaded into the two Chinooks, mission call signs Extortion 1-6 and Extortion 1-7. What happens next that night? We'll talk about it after the news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Here's Roger Badish. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN. Thank you for the news, Roger Badish. Ed Derrick is on the phone with us. We continue our conversation about his book, The Final Mission of Extortion 1-7. Ed, as I was going into the news there, I was reading just a little section of how they found out about the mission that day, who would be going on it, things like that. Is that how it generally works? I imagine there's not a, you know, so I apologize that my basis of knowledge here is from movies, but so in, say, Zero Dark Thirty, they plan for months. It sounds like what's going to happen when they try to go get Osama bin Laden, and they have, you know, little models out, and I think I read that they practiced the whole thing before they did it at least once. But it sounds like every day there's new missions, and they find out that morning and they go on them that night, and there's not a lot of time for a lot of in-depth planning. And it also sounds like that the forces that come together, not all of them work together all the time. So, you know, there's certain, it sounds like the crew is a little bit mixed, and depending on the operation and what's going to happen, there might be people there that you don't work with every day, that you don't get boots on the ground with every single day. Is that true?
Yes and no. In general, a lot of these special operations forces work together frequently, and now the units work together all the time, and maybe there'll be new people cycling in and cycling out, but the majority of the people have worked together a lot. And to include the helicopter pilots and crew who are supporting them, some of the members of Extortion 1-7, particularly Dave Carter, they were actually specifically requested by the SEALs. They knew about him from when he was supporting them in Iraq for special operations over there. But you're exactly right. These, you know, an operation like the Abbottabad Pakistan raid on the Bin Laden compound, you know, that was a special, you know, special situation where they really applied an awful lot of resources to that for obvious reasons. But in general, for the, you know, there's no run of the mill operation, but for a lot of these operations, or most all of them, they're intel triggered operations where they've been watching these people for months and months, and sometimes even over a year. They maintain eyes on these individuals, and once they act, they get what's called an intel hit, an intel trigger. And then they can formulate an operation based on their previous experiences and then go for it.
And
so that's how this happened.
Well, and so when they go on a mission like this, you know, we always think of, okay, they put a bunch of SEALs in a helicopter, go drop them off, they go get the bad guy, they come back and go. But it's so much more complicated than that. It's not just the two helicopters that are in the air. Tell us a little bit about all of the layers of data that they're trying to glean, not just from these two helicopters that are bringing the people in. Who else is in the air at the time when, like, this mission is going on?
You have two AH-64 Apache gunships. The gunships and the pilots, also Army Aviation, also co-located at Forward Operating Base Schenck with the Extortion Company and the Chinooks and the SEALs and the Army Rangers. They played an incredibly critical role in all these operations. And then there's an AC-130 gunship overhead. Oftentimes there's a Predator UAV, you know, more commonly called a drone. There are signals intelligence gathering aircraft like RC-12 Guardrail or MC-12 Liberty, which nobody's heard of. They're very secretive. Even people in the military know little about them or nothing about them. And they're there to gather intel constantly, real time. And then there's a satellite that's parked up above them, and there's processing centers. And there's a U-28 aircraft that's in the air. It's just like you said, there's a stack of aviation assets, and they're all working hand in hand and integrated in tightly into this complex orchestration.
So these two Chinooks are carrying all these guys out there at the start of the mission. And then there might be 3,000 feet in the air or 7,000 feet in the air, another aircraft, and then thousands more feet in the air. Another. I mean, there might have been four or five aircraft all sort of concentrated on this one mission, right?
Yep, exactly. Exactly. Yep.
We would never think of that, I think. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's the thing. You just don't. A lot of times people just think about the helicopter carrying the SEALs and it lands and they do their thing, but there's all these other aviation assets up there. So, by the way, you're really good. I mean, you really did read this. I really appreciate that. You pronounce everything right. I'm very happy. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. I'm taking a guess on a lot of the things I'm saying as far as the pronunciation, so I'm glad it's working.
Got it exactly right. No, it's very impressive. I appreciate it. There's a lot of stuff in this book. You know, I really get into this stuff a lot.
Yeah.
And sometimes I stray a little bit farther away from like the general reading, you know, kind of maybe, you know, get a little bit closer to writing for the practitioner. I don't mean to do that. It's a book for everybody and the editors make it that way, but there's a lot of stuff in this book.
I think it's good that you get more heavily into the detail than just keeping it dumbed down for us, because if you want it, it's there. If you don't, you might glaze your eyes over a little bit at some of this because it does get into the details, but it helps to understand that it's harder to understand and much more complicated than you would ever guess. I mean, I would have never, you know, I know that they've got night vision, their satellites taking photos and we've seen stuff like that, but I would never guess that the level of complexity with these, and still everything can go wrong, right? I mean, they get all this intelligence and their whole, you know, they do the best they can to have the intelligence to go after in this situation. Is it Lefty Grove? Is that the name of the guy?
Objective Lefty Grove, Tari Kahir. That was, you know, the intel people, they assign these names to the objectives, and who knows why they can use any convention they want.
Yeah.
They just use different names. So that's who they're going after. Yep.
So Lefty Grove, they're going after, and basically they had taken somebody else out months before. This guy filled the power void, and he was taking over, and now they wanted to try to take him out. Based on intelligence, he was going to be having a meeting at this place, and so here's the setup. We're going to go in and try and take him out. The helicopters land, of course, a couple miles away, because he can't just, even a quiet Chinook helicopter can't just land on top of a place without making plenty of noise and warning. So they land, everybody pours out of the helicopters and starts heading on foot in pitch black on kind of a moonless night with just their infrared goggles that they put on to see where they're going. The Chinooks take back off, head back to base, and wait further instruction. And so what happened was he wasn't there, right? Lefty was gone?
Well, he was there, but he got away. He got away, and so that's why Extortion 17 went back out, filled with SEALs, to do what's called a blocking position in the Western Valley. And that's when, like you said before, regardless of all the technology and the skill and the preparation, a lucky shot took the helicopter out while it was coming into land. You know, you can never get rid of luck. You can never get rid of the enemy's luck. Luck still has a say. But he was there. He was just moving. He got away. So.
And so basically, you know, they see all this, the helicopters see, and the great thing is, I don't know if it's a great thing, but fascinating to me also is that these helicopters have three, is it right? The Chinooks that drop them off also have three guys on guns in the helicopter itself, right? So as they're dropping people off, as they're coming in, they see people, if they see things through their goggles, they can also engage or just try to protect the helicopter. But so Extortion 17 has to come back in. They're bringing more people in, to, as you said, because they scattered, because they've got to chase these people down now. And it's interesting because the way the mission started, Extortion 16 and 17 are dropping everybody off. But when they come back with a whole load of people, the now the area they have to land is so small they can only send one ship in, because and they want to avoid, specifically because of something like this, the feeling was you bring in the second ship afterwards, then you've created such a long period of time, I guess, with ships coming into the same area that the enemy can set up, can get a shot off.
Exactly. And they did that they put everybody on board for a number of reasons. There was a lot more people in the initial raid that was two Chinooks. And this immediate reaction force is what it was called, was they had, I think it was a force total of 25 to include 8 Afghans. And so Jonas Kelsall, one of the SEAL Team 6 members, the commander actually of that force, wanted all the troops on the ground at the same time. So they wanted everybody on one helicopter. And you never want to go to the same landing zone twice. Like, they didn't want to fly into the other landing zone that they had initially flown into because they wanted to, you know, have the element of surprise. And they came in from a totally different direction. And so they did everything as they should have done it. And they, you know, they just never got on the ground. So
is it just
a lucky shot just less than a minute before landing?
And is it just is part of it that it I imagine the danger becomes exponential once you've already dropped troops off, once they've been in, there's been engagement, because there had been shots fired, there had been engagement. So now everybody on the ground in that area is aware, and the enemy is maybe just waiting to hear the sounds of another helicopter and just take shots, right?
Yeah, we'll never know the mindset or what those guys who shot at the helicopter, and which one of the shots actually hit the rotor blade and caused it to crash and kill everybody. We'll never know what was going through their minds. I mean, presumably they could have heard an operation going on farther down the valley, but there's no way they could have known that Extortion 17 would be coming, when it came, where it came, and who it would be carrying. They just heard a helicopter coming, grabbed RPGs and shot at it and got a lucky shot. So
how many of there were members of SEAL Team 6 on that helicopter who had been on the Osama bin Laden raid?
No. The unit is called Naval Special Warfare Development Group, and it's popularly called SEAL Team 6, and it's broken into a number of different squadrons. Okay. The squadron that performed the bin Laden raid was Red Squadron. This squadron was called Gold Squadron, TACDEVRON 3, Tactical Development and Evaluation Squadron 3. So, yeah.
Were there any changes made in the way that the forces come into battle like this in the wake of Extortion 17 and what happened? Are there lessons they learned, or sometimes do they write things off as sometimes the enemy, you know, will get their shots in and there's nothing we can do about that?
Unfortunately, that's the case. I mean, the enemy shot at helicopters in the war in Afghanistan all the time. I mean, hundreds of reported incidents and probably thousands, because, you know, how many times do these guys take shots at helicopters that you don't even know about? They almost all missed. I mean, it's just a fraction of a percent that actually hit. There's only a handful of helicopters that ever got hit by RPGs throughout the entire span of the war. And this is one of them. And it happened to be carrying a lot of people, and they got lucky. The only way this could have been prevented would have been through some sort of technical intelligence mechanism that this doesn't exist. Maybe in the future, they'll be able to scan an entire area so efficiently, so quickly, and so thoroughly that they'd be able to identify, you know, not only confirmed enemy forces, but potential enemy forces like these guys would have been. They just happen to be there. So, but that mechanism doesn't exist other than in concept.
Well, and I imagine the problem is, because you talk a little bit in the book about when some of these forces scattered on the original raid, then they get into an area of population and there's concern about collateral damage, so they don't fire. And I imagine as a chopper's coming in, and maybe through their infrared, they might be able to see human elements on the ground, but they're not allowed to just start firing unless they know that they're in danger, right?
Yeah, that's the case, but that wasn't the case here. Nobody saw these guys. Nobody knew about it. It wasn't even an opportunity, because there were two Apaches that were flying, circling the landing zone that they were headed toward, and they had their scanners focused on the landing zone and the area directly around it, because that's where you want to look for enemy, because that's when the helicopter is at its most vulnerable, where it's lowest and slowest, both coming into land and then relaunching. So that's where all their scans were. They just happened to fly by this village. And, you know, it's a numbers game, because think about all the helicopter flights in Afghanistan. I don't know, probably over a million. I don't even know what the number is. And all the times that they were shot at, and just I can only count 5 helicopters that were ever shot down in the entire span of the war by RPGs. It's such a remarkably low number compared to all the successes, but, you know, because it was such a tragedy,
yeah,
we really focus on it.
Yeah, anytime you lose service members, and you know, that's something that they want to focus on and try to make sure that doesn't happen again. And I imagine that it's just an inherent danger of the helicopter, because to carry that many people, you need something big, and it's going to be somewhat slow because it's got to be able to land, and that's just something you can only do so much about, I would suppose.
Exactly. The Chinook is the fastest helicopter in the Department of Defense operationally, but like you said, it was coming in to land. It was less than a minute from landing, and it was flying relatively slow, and it was low. And that's just the risk of war, not just with helicopters, with anything. Sometimes they get lucky. They get it right. They can exploit they didn't exploit anything with this other than just happen to be there, but that's just the nature of war. And that's the one element that will never change. It's getting less and less due to technology. And like we discussed earlier, the integration of all these different force types in operations, particularly, you know, intelligence capabilities, but it's just chance is still part of the battlefield. So even in modern war.
Yeah. And I imagine it always will be. The Final Mission of Extortion 1-7. Ed Derrick is the author. The book's available now in hardback, in bookstores, and online. Will this become a movie eventually, Ed? I would imagine that you've talked to somebody about that already at this point.
Yeah, some people express interest. I don't know if it'll be a movie. I hope that not just to enrich myself, but I hope every American reads this book. And I thank you very much for having me on to talk about it. It's a story of stories. It's a horrible tragedy, but it really opens a window for folks like us who are not war fighters to be able to understand modern warfare, the modern American military. And I think it would be great if it would become a movie. I don't know. I'm not in control of that.
Sure,
we'll see.
Sure.
I mean, it's only been out for, I think, not even 2 months now.
Yeah.
2 months tomorrow.
Yeah.
So.
Well, not just the modern American warfare machinery-wise, but also the human element, because you do a great job of getting into that. And I appreciate that, because I think we need to hear more of the stories of the individual soldiers, because we don't I think America does a better job of respecting and protecting their soldiers than we probably have in many years. But I think we still take for granted what everybody really goes through in these battles that we put them into every day over in these places like Afghanistan. Ed Derrick, The Final Mission of Extortion 1-7. Thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you. This has been wonderful. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Have a great one.
You too, Ed. I hope we chat again. 3:25 in the morning. We've got news coming up in a minute. 7:20 WGN. Esmeralda yelled at me tonight. No, she didn't yell at me. She was very nice because she was tipsy. but she said, don't sing with the Tree Time song.
Why not?
I don't know.
Elton Jim did it the other night.
You cannot help but sing with the Tree Time song.
Just make sure you get the lyrics right, though.
Well.
Because, you know, you may be tempted to sing the original lyrics with the melody.
Huh?
I did up here.
What's the original lyrics?
It's Jingle Bells.
Oh. I couldn't picture it in my head for a second.
Oh.
I usually come in on the ho, ho, ho. I try to time that out.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Jess was doing the song, and I jumped in with the ho, ho, ho.
That's all right. You did the chorus.
Well, I'll do it together next time. I'm sure it'll be back.
I'm sure.
Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m. Then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago at 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV. 3:30 in the morning. Let's get some headlines, Mr. Battish. Good morning, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. Happy Thanksgiving almost week. Almost week. I guess it's not until Sunday does it become Thanksgiving week, right?
Yeah.
But we're within the 7 days. We've got the Magnificent Mile Lights Festival set up here on Michigan Avenue, ready to kick off tonight. Was it at 5 p.m., Raj? Is that what we heard?
Yeah, I think it's a little earlier. Yeah, 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
And keep your fingers crossed that the rains will be gone by then.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. Nothing worse than wet and freezing.
Nothing worse than wet mice leading a parade.
Wet mice.
Well, that's what it would be.
Yeah, true.
So the Cats, I might wake up to watch Wildcat football and listen to Dave Ennett on the radio this morning.
Yeah.
I might have to get back up for that. Cats playing Purdue?
No.
Minnesota.
Minnesota. Yeah.
Minnesota. At home, though. They're in Evanston.
Yeah,
I saw them in the Tribune today.
10:30 pregame.
10:30 pregame, 11 o'clock kickoff.
Right.
than ranked Wildcats basketball.
Yeah, later but they the lost. They lost their last game. I don't know what Creighton. The ranking is going to be.
Yeah, they might drop
Creighton
out of the
top 25. Was a tough game.
But you know what? Basketball, you can lose games and still stay ranked. Is Creighton close to being in the?
Creighton's a tough always team. A good team. Creighton's always been ranked well.
So maybe if they can, you know, get back on the right track.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Northwestern always, to me, starts off this way. Now, they started out ranked, but that's rare. But, like, think about the Wildcats. They had a terrible loss at the beginning of the season, like to Duke or somebody, right? The Cats lost to some, like, one of those games
the football,
at the beginning of the year where, yeah.
Yo, yeah.
They lost
yeah.
one of those games at the beginning yeah. of the year that you're supposed to win, like
right.
against, you know, Mary Mother of Mercy.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go on a tear, and they've lost to Wisconsin and the really top teams,
yeah.
but they've also beat some really good
they've
teams.
They've won 6 straight.
They have.
Yeah.
Going to go to a bowl game.
Yep.
Hopefully a good bowl game.
Yeah.
Hopefully not the Motor City Bowl or something like that.
Mm, yeah.
You know, hopefully somewhere warm.
Something good and warm. And then you could go along with.
Could I?
Carry some cables.
They do need cable carrying.
They do need.
I'll be Dave and it's lackey. I'd be happy to do that.
You're going to be stuck in front of the radio all day long because after you got the football
mm-hmm.
and the basketball,
mm-hmm.
then you got the Hawks tonight.
And who are the Hawks playing tonight?
Hawks are
oh,
on the road.
Oh, they're playing Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm not looking forward to that one.
Why not?
Because Pittsburgh is best.
Well.
Do you remember opening night?
Oh, yeah.
Hawks beat them like 10-1 or
5,000 to nothing.
It was 10-1, I think. It was crazy.
Yeah, it was.
So, and then the Hawks started out really hot and then kind of, you know, cooled
well, the first
off.
Two games they started out hot. They had 15 goals in 2 nights.
They're only 9-8
and then,
in 2 or something, right?
I know, yeah.
They're struggling a little bit. I mean, they've been better lately, but they're struggling a little
mm-hmm.
bit. And Pittsburgh is going to be ticked.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're going to come out flying. I think it's going to be a tough night for Hawks.
Yeah.
I hope not.
Make for good hockey.
They opened their big brand new practice rink on the west side this
week. Yeah.
Sounds gorgeous.
I saw that.
So good things for the Blackhawks.
Mm-hmm.
I, Roger, earlier this week was in Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
I had never been to Oregon before.
It's beautiful up there.
Yeah. Okay.
I have relatives in Portland.
Here's the thing. Okay.
You didn't get to their rose garden. Oh, my
no.
gosh.
Although I do notice a lot of roses in the city.
Mm-hmm.
They do, you know, play up their roses.
There's a huge, and I do mean huge, tract of land in one of their parks, and it is turned over to nothing but varieties of roses.
Really?
And they're all in nice little, like a farm would be sectioned off by what vegetable they're growing.
Uh-huh.
And each one, it tells you the name, tells you what's a hybrid of, and it is heaven.
And so do you know how Portland became the city of roses? Like, why?
I don't know.
You know, I always wonder, like, what happened? Was there one guy who invented all these roses, or was this big rose farmer supplied all the roses in America at some
yeah.
point or something like that?
I've never looked into that.
Well, so... The way it's been tonight out here, mm-hmm. that was my 3 days in Portland.
Yeah.
Like, literally, mm-hmm. it was like this, and then it would get sunny for 10
mm-hmm.
minutes, and then it would go back to this. It was
yeah.
kind of crazy. And it's a very... I've been to Seattle before. It's a very... I would say it's probably how Austin was before Austin became Austin. It's kind of weird. It's kind of grungy. It's kind of crunchy, kind of granola-y. You know, it's very hip and...
crunchy granola
and
sweet.
Eco-friendly and things like that. It seemed
yeah.
like all of... Oh, let me tell you the weird story. So we get there on Sunday night, and we got a big videotaping thing to do early on Monday morning. So we fly in on Sunday night, and that's a long flight. It's like a
yeah,
4-hour or something.
Yeah.
So we get there on Sunday night, and Jim and I get settled in the hotel, and then we need something to eat, and there's a football game on. So I said, well, let's run over. Let's, you know, we asked the hotel concierge,
mm-hmm.
Where's a good little sports bar? And they're like, a couple blocks from here. You can walk. And I'm like, it's raining.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, you could take an umbrella.
Yeah.
We'll drive. So we drive a couple blocks away and park. And there's this tiny little sports bar just called the Portland Sports Bar and Grill.
Uh-huh.
And so we go in there and it is literally tiny. It's like a 5-person bar. And then, like, 6 tables. I mean, it looks like it seats 30 people max in the whole thing. So we sit down at the bar, and it takes us less than a minute to notice that the bartender, she is either high out of her mind or drunk as a skunk.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at it like, wait a minute. she's like hammered or stoned. I couldn't tell which. Now, it is a recreational marijuana state, so who knows? The waitress, there's one waitress, one bartender, both very beautiful women, but seemingly smashed. And
it was late at night, though, wasn't it?
No, because it was in Portland. It was like 7:30.
All right.
So it's not late. 7:30 on a Sunday night is not, well, A, it's Sunday, so why are you like that anyways? Because I would think normally that's a Friday, Saturday state of mind. But we're sitting there, and I realize it because, so where we sit at the bar, Jim sits, tucks into the left, and I sit next to him. And right in front of me is like that black rubber knobby pad where they mix the drinks. I was there for about a minute when the first cup got knocked my way, luckily only full of ice. And she's, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm like, oh, it's fine. That's when I realized,
The bartenders?
This is what's going on. You're hammered. Or stoned. I can't tell which. And so she's like apologizing, and she seems very nice, but like, she's like, I'm sorry. It's not normally like this in here. And I'm like, you're not normally drunk or stoned or witches.
Under the influence.
Under the influence of something.
Yeah.
And so then Jim's like, should we just go? And I'm like, well, I'm kind of invested in this now. I want to see what the hell's going on in here. Now I've got like a show. It's like a stage show. I want to see what's going to happen. And I bet him. I said, I'll bet you a dollar I'm wearing something before we leave here. And so I was on guard the rest of the night, kind of had my hands up anytime she was nearby, ready to catch something. Only one more time did she knock anything over by me. It got to the point that a guy who I couldn't tell if he worked there or just knew them or what was going on, he was on our side of the bar when we got there, but about 5 minutes later, he was behind the bar.
What?
Kind of keeping an eye on things. And like when she had to make a drink, he would get the bottle off the shelf and hand it to her. Because the shelves are a little bit up high, and I'm sure he was thinking she's about to knock everything over that we have here. And I thought she was, too. I thought for sure. So it was great when people would bring dishes back, because, like, the little kitchen, there was a hole in the wall next to her behind the bar where the guy would hand the food out. And so then there's, like, one of those big tubs underneath that where they're putting the dirty dishes.
Right.
She's throwing those dishes in there. I thought she was going to break everything.
Oh, my
God. She's just, like, tossing them in there. It was very loud, and Jim just wants to get out of there. I'm like, no, 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 this is good. I'm staying. I'm in. Let's go. And as I'm just waiting to see what's going to end, so we ordered food, and then so Jim orders a grilled cheese sandwich because he's very nervous about what's going on here and what the food's going to be like. I'm like, oh, come on. I'm sure the cook is fine. He's like, why would you think that? I'm like, well, I have no idea.
Everyone else is already.
Yeah. Nobody else in here is fine. Why is the cook suddenly straight-laced? And the cook ended up, it was a minute later after we ordered, when I saw the cook, who looked like Axl Rose took a job at the Portland Sports Bar and Grill. Yeah. So then I was a little nervous about it. But the food was delicious. It really was. It was great.
Thank goodness.
It worked out very good. But so the great, so we're sitting there and I'm just watching and enjoying the show and trying to figure out, is she going to fall over? Or what is she going to do? What is she going to knock over? Who is this guy that's helping her? Who is this goofball at the end of the bar in like this weird gangster suit? Like he's got a suit on, some weird loud plaid. He looks like he's out of a movie.
Gosh.
So I'm like, is this guy the owner? Is this guy like some drug pusher who's got them hooked on something? What's, I'm making up a whole story in my head. And so then other people come in and go out, and the girls are very friendly and very nice, and she's very apologetic, but she seems like just such a mess. I feel so bad for her. And then somebody comes in, and they're like, hey, blah, blah, blah. She's like, it's last call. Last call is right now. And I look at my watch, and it's 8:30. But she's done.
She's got things to do.
She's done. And then the next thing I know, the light is out in the kitchen. That guy's out having a drink. And it's like 8:30. And they're like, hey, football's on. We don't care. We're done. It's over.
Oh, my God.
And I didn't bring it up to Jim, but I really wanted to go back the next night and try to find out, like, you know, hey, so what was the deal here last night? Did they think nobody was coming in? So they all started drinking, and then suddenly customers came and they had to work and it just messed them up? Or what's going on here?
That's funny.
I mentioned to the clerk at the hotel, they said, how was dinner? I said, well, it was very interesting. And I told them, they said, yeah, I've always had weird experiences in that place. So,
but that's where he sent you.
Yeah. Well, you could go there. Okay.
Oh, no God. Warning. That's funny. So you're going to go back to Portland and have some more fun sometime soon?
I don't think so.
Oh.
I mean, Portland was nice. It was funny. The veterinarian who we were videotaping there, a great guy, he said that he used to live in Minneapolis and had gone out to do some like a residency in Portland and just fell in love with Portland. So he moved out there.
Yeah.
And I was there for 3 days, and I was saying to Jim, I'm like, I'm not falling in love with Portland. I'm not moving out here.
Yeah.
Maybe it was the weather. Maybe it was just like, you know, what is so fabulous about Portland? I don't know. I liked it. It seemed nice. People seemed really nice. Everything was whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just, I don't know. So here's the highlight of the trip.
Oh, wait, that wasn't the highlight?
That wasn't the highlight. No, my gosh. So, as you know, Roger, I am a huge fan of Twin Peaks.
Yes.
The television show.
Oh, yeah.
Which came back on Showtime this year. And in Twin Peaks, they eat at the Double R Diner, which is known for its coffee and its fabulous cherry pie and donuts. Well, when they shot the pilot for Twin Peaks back in like 1988, 89, they found this northwestern location up in the area of North Bend, Washington, and Snoqualmie, Washington. You know, I don't know how well you remember, but the iconic beginning of the show, there's this hotel, the Great Northern, and there's these beautiful waterfalls right behind it.
Right.
Well, that's actually in Snoqualmie. There's a lodge, the Snoqualmie, I think, Spa and Lodge, is what they use for the exterior of that.
Oh, okay.
The interiors were shot elsewhere up there. And then they use this Double R Diner. It's actually called, it's now called Tweed's Diner.
Okay.
It has a T in it, but the actual location is where they shot the pilot. Then they built a soundstage when they did the show, and the interiors were shot there. But then when they did the movie that came out after the series, and then when they did the new series this year, they went back and shot scenes at this diner.
Cool.
And so the diner had just been redone for the Showtime show that they redid. They redid the whole interior.
Mm-hmm.
And so we drove 3 hours up there.
You did.
We did. Oh, we drove 3 hours up there to go.
It was like a pilgrimage.
To spend 10 minutes. And then we had to get back in the car and travel 3 hours to catch the plane.
I'm
dead
minutes?
Serious. Dead serious. Went in, took pictures, had a piece of cherry pie, back in the car and go.
Oh, my gosh.
But it was cool.
Was it a reverence?
It was really, I mean, if you are a huge, ridiculous fan of Twin Peaks,
which
that's like a bucket list type thing. Like, we went to the Double R Diner, and the pie is really good. It really is. I mean, it was delicious. Now, maybe there's no way I wasn't going to say that. I don't know.
Right.
But it was good. And they have Twin Peaks memorabilia throughout the diner, and there's a back wall when you go back towards the bathrooms. This whole wall is filled with photos from production and when they shot the movie and when they shot the series and all these, you know, different things that they did there. It was really cool.
That's great.
It was
well,
neat.
Congratulations.
And I'll tell you what.
It wasn't for naught.
It was not for naught. And the scenery, when you're driving up there, is incredible.
Yeah.
The trees and it's very beautiful, and especially this time of year, the colors were changing. It was gorgeous. And kept passing all these logging trucks that are carrying, you know, these ginormous trees that have been cut down on flatbeds. That was pretty cool, too.
That's neat.
Yeah. So it was cool.
Well, why'd you have to fly back? You said you had to fly out? Is that why you had to rush back?
Yeah, because
oh, okay.
we did the taping one day, and then, don't tell my wife, but I purposely set the flight up kind of late the next day so Jim and I could pull this off because we both really want to do this. And I didn't tell Colleen until like that morning. I'm like, well, we wrapped up. So I think Jim and I are going to run up. And she's like, well, how far of a drive is that?
Yeah.
Not wanting us. I'm like, oh, it's like an hour, I think. It's not a big deal. Oh, I totally lied. Because if I said it's 3 hours, she was going to lose it on me.
Yeah, yeah.
Because what are you doing?
Right.
We had to wake up at 5 a.m. to drive to get there at 8. The plan was get there at 8, leave at 9, come back because we had to be at the airport at noon. Well, you know, things run late, things whatever, traffic, this and that. We got there like after 9, 10
right.
minutes, boom, back. We're at the airport at 12:25, I think.
Whew.
Made our flight.
Man. She's none the wiser?
Well, she knows we went, but she doesn't know I drove that long.
Yeah.
So please, everybody, if you see her,
don't talk.
Mind your P's and Q's.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but it was cool. It was worthwhile. Now, I want to go back again because what I really want to go see is the house. So Laura Palmer, the beauty queen who died, her house, the outside of that house is in Everett, Washington, which is about an hour away.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman who bought this house about a couple years ago, the previous owner had not wanted any Twin Peaks people coming by. The owner now, I read, is pretty friendly to Twin Peaks people when they come by. And as long as you're courteous or call ahead, she'll let you look in the house and things like that. And David Lynch actually put her in the new series.
No way.
When they go to, there's a scene where they go to the house and she answers the door.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
Very, very.
So I want to go back and see that someday. And I want to stay in the lodge and all these things.
Well, then.
Because I'm a total geek.
I know you are.
But it was,
then take
it was
the family
cool.
with.
The family has no interest in doing any of that. They might be up for a slice of pie. That's about as far as I'm getting them.
Well, you got to find what's the excuse you're going to use then to...
I'm going to find another veterinarian. I need to videotape out there somewhere.
Yeah, there you go.
Actually, I think So there's a Twin Peaks festival every year. I don't know if you remember, about 3 or 4 months ago, I interviewed the author of a Twin Peaks book while he was at the festival. They stay at that lodge and stuff. I kind of want to go to that. Jim thinks that might be a total freak show and we shouldn't do that.
Why? Because...
Because the people that tend to go stay at things like that maybe are a little too much into it and... Maybe that's...
Well, look who's talking.
Hello. He got us there. I agree. Oh, my God. Somebody, a one-star review of the Portland... Somebody sent me a link to a one-star review of the Portland Sports Bar and Grill.
A one-star review?
Oh, my God.
How many actual reviews are there on that page? One?
This is from November 12th. Wait, when was I there? Is that when I was there?
What year? Is it this year? It says?
Hold on. Let me look at the dates.
Uh-oh.
Oh, my God. That's when I was there.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God. Okay. So we came in for the first time for some football and dinner. Brought our out-of-town guests. Not only did it smell like burnt slash old vat oil, but both the server and bartender were wasted. Like, completely drunk. Needless to say, could not remember even our drink orders. We left after one drink, needless to say. Unprofessional is an understatement. Unacceptable. We'll never be back.
Oh, my goodness. That is crazy.
Okay. Now, there's a comment from Jeffrey O. I cannot express enough how deeply concerned I've been over your review. We do not condone or tolerate that type of behavior at our establishment. For you to think that our staff was serving you while being intoxicated is very alarming to me. As soon as I saw your review, I had many very serious conversations with my entire staff. We reviewed how illegal and irresponsible it is to consume alcohol while working, not to mention the great possibility of losing our liquor license. If you are willing to give us another try, I'd be happy to buy your meal and show your experience is far from typical.
I think they're all going to just still be wasted.
That is great. I want to see who that guy. I wonder if I saw that guy there that night. I got to see who.
Could have been the guy at the end of the bar.
Oh, no. This guy's like a young guy that answered back. He was not there that night. Yeah, they were gone.
Wow.
Oh, I don't think they were drunk. I'm telling you, that did not look like drunk to me. But what do I know, Raj?
Yeah, the
burger was still good. I'll say that.
It's all right. Well, did you have a plain cheeseburger or a regular burger?
No, it was like a
bacon burger.
It was like a jalapeno. I forget what it was. Oh, it was like a jalapeno cream cheese burger or something.
Ooh,
I think there was jalapeno cream cheese. I mean, it was good.
I
had I think garlic fries, garlic parmesan fries,
nice.
Delicious. Jim had the grilled cheese and tater tots.
Can't go wrong with that.
You can't, and he didn't. And we had a show. They put on a show.
They did, for nothing.
Well, not for nothing. I mean, I did pay for it. Although it was funny. So as we're waiting, as we're finishing up, there's a guy arguing with them because he tried to pay by credit card. And then I thought they said it didn't go through and they got to do it again. And he's like, my wife just looked online and the charge is there or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And this girl's like, I can't figure it out. I don't know. I don't know why. And so I'm just like, so... As we get our bill, I'm like pulling out cash.
Yeah.
I'm like, you got a couple bucks, Jim? He's like, yeah, good call on that one. I'm like, yeah, I'm not handing over a credit card in this establishment this evening.
It's funny.
Not going to do that.
Oh, God.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll get the news with Roger, and we'll have more fun and merriment here. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. I love that there was a one-star review from the actual night I was there. It makes me happy in a weird way. Although I feel bad for the owner. I'm looking at their website, family-owned business. He's definitely, boss isn't here tonight. Let's just get hammered. It'll be fun.
That sounds like it would be every night, though, the way that with the review and what you experienced.
It was the same night. The review was from the night
still,
I was there. Well, I imagine the boss isn't there. No, the boss was not there.
The person who reviewed it, if they were there when you were there.
Yeah, or a little bit earlier. They said they just had one drink and left. Which is what Jim wanted to do, but I wouldn't let him. Unfortunately, this guy didn't have friends with him. Go, no, this is good. Let's see what happens. 401, let's get upstairs, Mr. Battish. That's a long-distance dedication. One of our listeners said his mom passed away earlier this week. That was her favorite song.
Aww,
so a shout-out to that
great
listener.
Song. That Sorry to song. Hear that.
I have not heard that in a long time. Is that, who is that? Rog, you should know that. Don't
I
look it up.
That.
You should just know it.
No, I know I should know. Runaway.
Is that Del Shannon? That's not
yes.
Del Shannon. Is it?
Yep.
Did Very you already good. Tell me that, Jess? Okay.
Maybe Did that's she tell you?
She had earlier when she told me about it.
Oh,
I couldn't
okay.
remember if I knew that or if she yeah. had told me that. I might have known that anyways. I might not have. I don't know. But that is a good song.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's a perfect hits. For tonight because it's yeah. a rainy night out.
Yep.
You She's didn't. With... You, she didn't. You did, what? Just say things on the air. You can say things on the air. Turn
Talk
your mic
on
and tell me what you said.
I didn't recognize the song, and our caller told me I must be young.
Well, you are young.
Well, yeah.
So there's that.
That was the 60s.
Was it in the 60s?
Yeah.
Can I tell you, Roger, it is like 12 degrees in this studio right now.
It's always cold.
I don't know
there.
What the hell
always
they do down
Always cold.
But it's
down
not
there.
Always. When I get in, when yeah. I fill in during the day, it's fine. When I'm with Patty doing crosstalk, it's fine. It's like 3 a.m., 3:15 a.m. Something happens in the boiler room
yeah.
that they just start. I mean, literally, the air conditioning is on in here. It's not
that's,
like they turn
no,
the heat
crazy.
Off.
That's crazy.
The air is on.
Well, are the blinding lights on? I can't tell.
No. Well, you've got those relatively turned down. Patty only had one lamp.
Yeah,
in
she
here
had all
tonight.
Her lamps on.
She
but,
broke
but
the
if
other
you
one.
Turn the.
Marlene, Patty broke that lamp, just so you know.
What?
Well, there's a, Patty said, broken lamp. I'm not taking that. Geez. I don't want Marlene at my crawl.
Yeah. If you turn on the blinding lights, it might warm you
I
up. It might fry you.
You look so bad, though.
Yeah, I know.
I'd rather look good than be warm.
Well, I can barely see you on
Well,
monitors.
See, that's how I look good. Darkness is our friend as we age, my buddy.
I have a face made for radio. Mm. Yeah. They tried to get me to do TV. Did you know
yeah,
that?
No. Who?
Yeah. Traffic.
They, Why didn't you do
many,
that?
A long time ago, not a long time ago, but maybe about 8 months ago, something like that, maybe a year ago.
Where were you
going
to do it on TV?
Well, they wanted me. It's the same company I work for, you know, on Friday and Saturday nights, the traffic company.
Is it Metro anymore? Who is it?
No. It's USTN, U.S. Traffic Network.
Is that a brand new company?
No. They bought out Radiate.
Which had come Which had out of been, Metro.
I'm not sure the history of that. I know. It's, and there were two, and I'm not sure what happened to them. And
I know years ago it used to be Metro. I don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah. Well, they wanted me to do TV. And so I said, you got a couple of minutes? We're going to talk about this. And I said, I've done TV before. I've done TV news and weather. I've got a picture about that. And I did for the Autism Channel. I did about a year's worth of TV news.
You should jump back in the game, Raj. That's big bucks. TV traffic. That's where the money is.
No. I haven't worked with a green screen.
Ah, come on.
If I go practice a little bit.
You should.
Off camera, off air.
We have a green screen over at Black Dog. You're welcome to come over anytime.
Oh, good. All right. You got TV set up on the side so I can
no.
see the weather maps?
No, we don't have that. You're just going
well,
to pretend. We could set
I
that
need
up,
the weather
I suppose.
Maps.
Why do you need a weather map? You're doing traffic.
Oh, I need the traffic map. You see the traffic map behind them?
Yeah, but do you have to
with
point
all the cars?
At it? I never
yes.
see a traffic person do it like a weather person.
You gotta,
they do that?
You got to point at where the accidents are and everything, don't you?
Yeah, but here's the good part.
What?
The expressways are always in the same place. For the weather person, the weather is in different places
no,
every
but
day. They got to point to
I've
the different
seen,
areas.
I've watched the traffic on TV, and I see the maps move up and down and left and right and everything. And so we're, you know, if I'm pointing at the... at 57 on my
there,
lower right,
there,
and then suddenly
there,
57
there.
Jumps up so I can take a look at some other road. I don't want to be pointing at the wrong road and saying, you know,
can't mean
here's
wrong,
the
Roger.
Edens, and I'm pointing at 55. I don't want to do that.
Well, that's a quitter's attitude. As well.
I got better things to do.
You have nothing better to do.
Yes, I do.
You do
I
not.
Have so much to do.
Well, you got to make that money.
Busy man.
Oh, jeez, here we go. You can't play golf. It's freezing out now.
I can't play golf because I'm not supposed to play golf. Remember? My neck and shoulder.
Nah.
I don't want to.
I shouldn't be playing hockey. I think I need surgery on both shoulders.
Oh, stop!
I'm dead serious.
No,
I guarantee you, I need surgery on both shoulders.
What did you do?
I don't know.
Rotator cuff?
Well, I had rotator cuff surgery on the right shoulder 5 years ago,
right.
4 years ago, and it's been relatively fine ever since. And then about 3 months ago, I hurt my left shoulder playing hockey, and I re-injured my right shoulder about 2 months ago.
Oh, no.
And so it's tough sleeping at night because I have to try to find a position where the arms can be comfortable because both of them have varying degrees of pain.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, the insurance that we buy is so ridiculous now because the insurance premiums are out of control that I'm not going to do anything before the end of the year, because if I'm going to end up spending every last dime I have to operate on the shoulders, I'm going to make sure we've covered our nut for the year so that
anything else
that goes wrong, we can feel comfortable we'll be covered.
Well, do you, are they saying physical therapy first?
Oh, I haven't gone to see anybody.
Oh, you haven't even gone?
No. Okay. I'll go see my doctor at the beginning of the new year, and then I'll have to get an MRI.
Right.
And then we'll figure it
out. They'll recommend physical therapy. We don't want to spend the money on surgery. You need to go physical therapy. That's what they keep telling me.
Well, that must be because, well, are you on Medicare or Medicaid?
Medicare.
There must be something where they're not confident they're going to get all this money.
But they were telling me this before, because I've had this problem for like 4 years now.
I've never heard of them saying, we don't want you to spend the money. I feel like they're like, you know, you need surgery.
Well, they've told me that too on the neck, and I'm just not going to do it.
See, that's terrible. That's not how it should be in America, where we're a very wealthy nation. We shouldn't have health coverage where we're saying, well, that's not worthwhile. I guess I'll just live in pain. That's what we're saying now.
Yeah.
I'm spending $1,400 a month on insurance to say, well, I guess I'll just live with two shoulders that need surgery.
Right.
That sucks.
And then you have to pop aspirin all day and night long.
Well, I try not to do that.
Yeah.
I just, you know.
I was told to take it easy after my issues 3 years ago when I had the relapse. They said, well, now what? You got to be careful how many Tylenol you take a day or this or that because, and don't take this kind, take this other kind because it'll mess you up. And so, yeah, so I do that. I'll take two tablets a week. And that's usually Thursday night, Thursday nights at the bowling alley.
Ah.
End of the first game, beginning of the second game. And then I bring my ice wrap. I'm not kidding. I bowl with my ice wrap around my neck.
Believe me. People are starting to tell me maybe you should quit playing hockey. This is all I've got. Not that it's all I've got, but it's all I've got competitively that I do anymore. And I would hate to give that up.
And you're still a young man.
Well, not really, but
I'm not. Help you out here.
I'm about to turn 46.
Oh, that's nothing.
I know to you it's nothing, but to me it's death.
Yikes. Oh, my God.
All right, it's not that bad, but it sucks. It sucks to be 46 and have trouble getting out of bed in the morning because you can't push off the one shoulder to get up. I have to sort of violently throw myself up in the air to get
up
in the morning.
Why do you think I sleep in the recliner?
Oh, God. I know, that's what I'll be doing.
I can't shift. It forces me to sleep on my back instead of my side.
See, and I
can't
sleep on my back.
And then I can get up in the morning.
Because if I sleep on my back, I snore so bad.
Oh.
I probably need it. That'll be next. I'm going to have the stupid CPAP machine on.
Oh, good Lord. You know, when you hit 50.
Jess is just in there like,
you're going to look back on 46 and say, oh, I wish I was young again.
Well, that's a sad thought. Because if things are going to get that bad that I'm longing for this, I'm really going downhill then, apparently. Oh, Roger.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
You're still young.
Well, thank you for thinking that.
When do you get to be 65? Which is still young.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh, okay. I was emptying bags of heavy stuff a couple of weeks ago, emptying out that room, of course I had to get a swinging motion to get it into the dumpster
to get some momentum going.
Yes, I'm there. I'm going. Please, bag, don't break while I'm doing this, and I'm swinging, and then up and throw it into the dumpster. Oh, my God. I looked ridiculous.
That I believe. Hey, let me ask you this. So on the flight back from Portland.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here's what happened. Let me just tell you a quick aside.
Okay.
So when Jim and I travel for work to go videotape things for Black Dog, he likes window seats. I like aisle seats. But we like to sit next to each other as we talk and laugh or whatever. So generally, I will do a window and a middle on one way and an aisle and a window on the other way. Or we always have a middle both ways. So I always let him decide, do you want middle on the way there or the way back? And he'll figure out whatever based on the window because he likes the window. So on the way back, because there were a lot of seats left on the flight at the time, I booked us on a window and an aisle thinking maybe nobody will buy that middle seat.
Ooh.
And then we'll have some room and just, you know, it'll be more comfortable. Mm-hmm. So I did this. And then as we're waiting to get on the flight, you know, on the screen, they flash like people are going for upgrades and here's what's left on the flight.
Oh, you'll see it.
And I saw our seat is still open. So I'm hopeful we get on the flight and people are coming in. They're going by us. We keep thinking, what's it going to, and nobody gets in our seat.
Yes.
And now they're starting to give like the pre-flight, you know, talking to people and doing things. We're thinking, wow, wait a minute. Is the door already closed? Maybe the door's closed. I think the door's closed. And then they're doing other things and we're like, the door's closed. This is great. We're going to have this whole, it's all open. And then a guy gets up about six rows ahead of us in a middle seat.
Uh-oh.
And he walks, somebody talked to him. He gets up. He comes out of his seat. He walks towards the back of the plane. I'm all tense as this is happening. Like,
right.
I know this is too good to be true. Walks all the way to the back. Then he comes walking back up, talks to the flight attendant again, then comes walking back slowly, gets to us and says, is anybody sitting in that seat?
Oh, no.
And I didn't buy the seat, so it's not like I can say yes, technically, right? But I wanted to say, why, yes, there is. But you know, that would be a lie. So I just said, no. Looking at him like, why the hell would you move from one middle seat to another middle seat? What is wrong with you? And so at that point, what I should have done, to be fair, is I should have taken the middle seat because Jim took the middle seat on the way there.
Yeah.
But I'm annoyed. I'm like, you're not getting my aisle seat coming from your middle seat.
Yeah.
So I said, no. And I get up and I make room and he starts coming in and I said,
oh, no.
Why did you give up your other middle seat? And he sort of hesitated and then just said, they asked me to move.
They asked him to move?
And I'm like, what the hell kind of cockamamie story is that? Who's asking you to move? I let it go, but I really wanted to get into this because now I'm annoyed.
Man.
I think he might have been an air marshal. I'm not sure.
Really?
Well, because here's what I did, Raj. Because I was so annoyed, I peered out of the side of my eye at his laptop for quite a while as he was working on his laptop. And there was a lot of like airline stuff on it. So I was like, oh, maybe he's an air marshal. I don't know.
No.
That was the only thing that would sort of make me happy.
I would have been looking, tried to look under his coat as he turned around, see if he was packing.
Frisk him.
Frisk him as he goes past you. You know, there's not enough space there. You could have frisked him when
he
kind of
bumped into him, grabbed him around the side. Nah. I didn't go that far, but I was annoyed. Anyway, so then we're flying home. And I did a little work, and then United has a great, on most of their flights, there's in-flight entertainment that's free. If you have the latest United app on your phone or your tablet, you can download free movies, free TV shows, or stream them as you're flying. It's really nice. You don't have to pay for it. So I watched Wonder Woman finally.
Well,
I had never seen Wonder Woman. I know, and I wanted to see it forever. And I finally got to watch it, and I thought it was really, really good.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, Raj. I think I am in love with that Gal Gadot. Is that
you think?
Oh my goodness!
Yeah.
Well, of course she's drop dead gorgeous. We knew that,
right.
But she's so good in that role.
She's excellent,
man. She was also in. I realized this the other day. There was a movie with John Hamm and Zach Galifianakis and Isla Fisher about a year or two ago, three ago, called Meet the Joneses. Zach Galifianakis is a just boring old guy and his very beautiful wife, who he never would have landed in real life. And next door moves in John Hamm and Gal Gadot, and they're like undercover agents. And they're like this perfect couple.
I don't remember that one. The title sounded familiar, but I'm thinking of a different movie.
I could be wrong, but I think my guess is that was Gal Gadot's first big screen, big thing, unless she's been around for a while, but I'm guessing she hasn't been.
I don't know. You want me to, the librarian to?
Sure, you can in your spare time.
I'll just.
But Wonder Woman was really, really good.
Yeah.
Now, and then the other night I saw just a little bit of Batman versus Superman because I'd never seen that.
Again? What do you do with your time?
Well, nobody had really wanted to go see it when it came out. I thought Jack would want to go see it. I think eventually he saw it, but he didn't really give it a good review.
Mm-hmm.
And none of my other kids really wanted to go see it, so I just never got to go see it.
Right.
And now it's on cable, mm-hmm. and so I watched like the last half hour. Does Wonder Woman just show up there at the end? How did she get introduced in that movie?
She
shows up when they're fighting.
No. She shows up
but how
earlier at the fundraiser for Lex Luthor. Luthor has an event, and Batman and Superman in their everyday street disguises,
mm-hmm.
Mild-mannered reporter,
right,
for great metropolitan newspaper. And she's also there, and Batman goes down to try to steal some files or electronic whatever, and so does she, and she steals his little USB thingy, and he gets it back, and that's where he sees the folders that Lex Luthor has already put together on all the superheroes. And he sees her picture from World War One.
Two.
Two? One? Two?
One.
One.
I thought it was two.
I think it was one.
Maybe it was one.
And realizes that, wow, she's been around for a long time.
So it's so interesting because the Wonder Woman movie came out after Batman versus Superman,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But they set up the whole backstory because that photo.
Right. The photo is what connects it. Yeah.
Wonder Woman, and the guy, Chris Pine, who's kind of the main character with her in Wonder Woman,
mm-hmm.
is in that photo in this movie. So
yes.
they must have had them all very well planned out already.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course. It's Hollywood.
Well,
everything's
know.
Planned out. Gal Gadot was in Keeping Up with the Joneses.
That's the movie.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And Furious 7. Let's see here. Oh, that's, let me get to the... of course, she's an actress in Israel. She was in Entourage for one episode. The Beautiful Life TV series. Date Night, Night and Day, as in K-N-I-G-H-T and Day. Fast Five, Fast and Furious. Oh, she's been in a lot of these. Yeah, Furious 7.
I didn't realize that.
Batman, Superman, yep.
Well, she's, of course, extremely beautiful, but she's a good actress,
yeah.
too. So.
Mm-hmm.
It will be interesting to watch. And now I don't know how much more she has to play Wonder Woman. I imagine quite
well,
a bit.
Well, she's already signed on for Wonder Woman 2
mm-hmm.
and Justice League Part 2. So she is playing, and another one called Flashpoint that's been announced. I'm reading it off her IMDb.
Is that going to be a Flash movie?
Well, it says, yeah, I bet you it is. And she plays Wonder Woman in it. I bet you it is a Flash movie. And she'll play Wonder Woman in it.
And so I noticed. Well,
but now she has claimed or said that she will not appear in any movies that are financed by one of the guys.
Brett Ratner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good for her.
She came
and
right
she
out and
should.
Says, I'm not going to do it.
She should hold them hostage.
Yeah.
Because she's Wonder Woman and ain't nobody replacing her as Wonder Woman.
No.
I'll tell you that right
you
now.
You can't do that.
And
yeah.
that is a money-making machine,
mm-hmm.
and they will bend to her will. So
yeah.
good for her. She should stand her ground and say, screw it.
Yep.
I will not do anything as long as he's involved. She absolutely should do that, and
yep.
they should figure it out and fix that for her. That's for sure, and good for her for taking that stand.
Yep.
So I saw a little bit of the file thing at the end. I saw when Wonder Woman is clicking on these files and realizing he's got this stuff on her and other people.
Right.
And Aquaman was one of them.
Right.
Was he in the movie at all besides in that file?
No, just in that file.
So they must have really, I mean, I know you say they had it planned out, but they're shooting minor little scenes with these characters who are then going to be, the Justice League movie was like, I mean, think about this. This was in Batman versus Superman,
mm-hmm.
which came out when? 2015? Or was it last summer?
It's been a couple of years.
Yeah. And the Justice League movie's just coming out now.
Right.
So Jason, is it Momoa, the guy who's playing Aquaman,
mm-hmm.
he shot that years ago knowing he was going to be in this movie.
Right.
Well,
they signed him up back then.
I guess.
Knew what the sequence was going to be. They do that with the Marvel ones.
Do they have an Aquaman movie playing too?
I'm sure they do. You know, they'll break them out.
Yeah.
And, you know, in their own starring roles.
Now, Elliot was saying earlier tonight on Patty's show that he did not love the Superman right
now.
Yeah,
he did not Superman Batman.
That
he
first,
did not like that
and
one.
I understand a lot of people didn't, but that first Superman movie I thought was really good.
The very first one?
Yeah, with Henry Cavill. You didn't think so? Really?
I have not been enamored, other than the Wonder Woman, I have not been enamored with the DC
universe.
Yeah.
Why did you not like the Superman
I don't know.
Movie?
It just didn't do anything for me. I didn't like the darker side. The very bland. There's very little personality in it. But they're basing that on the newer Superman in the comics. And like, again, I'm from an older generation and a different viewpoint of the Superman character.
I think they're basing it all on the success of the Christian Bale Batman movies. I think that changed an entire direction of where these movies go.
Yeah, I think so.
And the darker, harder edge has done very well.
Yes.
And let's face it, Raj, I'm sorry, I don't want to offend you right now, but Superman never had a whole lot of charisma.
What in
Roger, this is a man who can put on a pair of glasses and suddenly you don't recognize him.
Yes.
That's the definition of a milquetoast person. Oh, who is that?
And there was
take the
purpose.
Glass off. Oh, right. It's you.
There was a purpose for that. But the personality should change when he changes. And it doesn't. Yeah. He stays bland. Mm. I don't care much for it. Which is my own personal, and you know, as much of a Marvel person as I am, there's a couple of the Marvel movies that I just I watch and I go, why am I watching this?
It feels like it all is being overdone now, isn't it?
Well,
like
not
the whole
it's...
idea of this Justice League here. Mm-hmm. My problem, like with the Superman movie later on, and now with this Justice League movie, or the Batman versus Superman, it becomes so much of the fighting. Like, that's what I loved about Wonder Woman. There was a decent amount of fighting, but there was a lot of story. And it was well written, I thought, about the Amazons and their life and then the war and him trying to explain war and her not ever having been around a man. I mean, all of that was really good and fresh and interesting. And there was battles, but what was great about the battles in the Wonder Woman movie was that because it was more World War II-ish or World War I-ish, you know, there was some stuff at the end where it gets a little crazier, but it's, you know, airplane fighting and shooting and just a little more realistic. But you get into these Superman movies or Batman movies where they're destroying entire cities with their fights. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, all right, well, you just created $4 billion in damage, you know? And so it kind of comes and goes on the, I don't know, how realistic it should or should not be. And this Justice League movie looks like it's going to be just a nonstop fight.
Yeah.
Which is kind of annoying.
But I want to see these. I'll go see it. I want to see how. And again, you know, what's his name was playing Batman. They're playing a very deadpan. All of them. With the exception of Wonder Woman. Because hers is a character that's kind of out of time and out of place.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And that gives it a just such a more interesting...
Exactly.
Now, where's Captain America? Is he with this group?
He's Marvel.
He's on the other side.
Yeah, he's on the other side.
Because he was also...
He was out of time and place.
I never saw his movie.
The first one?
His origin story movie. Was that Winter's Tale
No,
or
no,
something?
No. That Winter Soldier came second.
Okay, what was the one where he's in the war and then he's invented, basically?
That was the first one.
Just Captain America?
Yeah, it was Captain America. Yeah.
I need to see that movie because I bet I would like that.
Yeah. It's very well done. Very well done. The setup for it is very well done.
I hate to tell you this, but we're late for news. Are you ready to do the news?
I'm sorry. We're late for who?
It's called The News, Roger.
Yeah.
It's a very important thing here at 720 WGN.
Yeah.
Okay. 4:35 in the morning. Let's get upstairs and check the headlines, Mr. Battish. Yeah. Good morning, everybody. Matt Bovalo with you here, 720 WGN. Well, we've got about 20 minutes left, Roger. So now the debate is, what do we talk about? Do we talk about Al Franken? Do we talk about Roy Moore? Do we talk about Donald Trump? Do we talk about Gabby Douglas?
Yeah, I saw something about her.
That.
Yeah.
She took it down and apologized.
Yeah. I just... This is a brave new world that we live in.
It is a new world.
Yeah.
That is for sure.
Yeah.
But it's good, I think.
Well, it is good because for too long, too much went on.
That we didn't know a lot about, huh?
Well, we did know about it, but we had a different attitude about it. That's
I guess you're right.
Difference.
I guess there was a lot of just, oh,
I'm not saying that it was right then and it's not right now because it's never right. But it was a different day and age, and it shouldn't have been. But that's the way this country was. That's the way the world was. Some parts of the world are still that way. And this is an enlightenment. And I think that this could lead to a lot of changes in the way that men and women get along. And I'm talking about glass ceilings. I'm talking about equal pay. I'm talking about health care. I'm talking about a lot of stuff. This is a bellwether moment. Now, if whether government, our elected officials do something about it legally, that's another story.
Well,
because I don't think they can do much of anything right
whether
now.
Whether we as a human race do something about it.
Well, as human race, yes, but then it all comes down to laws.
I mean, I know,
you know.
Sure, everything comes down to laws, but this might be the one time that I'll say that there's laws on the books. Almost everything we're hearing about, as far as the assaults and the ones that I don't know how exactly you define, because there's a lot of weird crap going on that wasn't maybe technically an assault. It was assault on you mentally, for sure. The whole, I mean, there's 18 different categories going on of stuff that's coming out now on what people have done to each other that previously just got swept under the rug.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, some of it is your traditional assault that people were afraid to come forward with. And then some of it is just really weird crap that Louis C.K. and Harvey Weinstein were doing, where they are masturbating in front of people, which I just still can't quite wrap my head around. And I don't know, is that like a psychological disorder you see somebody for, or is that this weird power trip? I still don't get what the hell that is.
I think that's probably a combination of those two things. I think that they had that problem before they had the money. And then when they had the money and the power, they could act on it in that kind of a way.
See, that's interesting. So you think they would have done that to people before they had money and power? Because
I don't think
before you had money and power,
it.
You could ever pull that off.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. Before they had the money and power, they were probably doing it in an extremely surreptitious way, where you would walk, you would see him or something, and just say, "Oh, there's that weird, creepy guy. Stay away from him." That he wasn't targeting anyone specifically.
Well, that's interesting. My guess is before they had power, they weren't weird and creepy outwardly.
I think they were.
Clearly, they were creepy, but not outwardly.
Well, not outwardly.
This seems
that way
to me like the ultimate, I have this power, and look at what power I have. I'm going to do this, and you're actually going to sit there and not do anything about it.
Right.
That is like the ultimate weird power trip.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it. And I keep wondering, you know, I thought Harvey Weinstein would be the only person we'd ever hear about doing that. And then we're hearing about Louis C.K. doing that. And I'm wondering, are there going to be more and more men that...
I fully believe that. I don't think this is...
I know we're hearing more groping stories, and we're hearing lots of stories about that.
Mm-hmm.
And those are going to keep coming out, apparently. And they just keep coming out.
Mm-hmm.
I read one earlier tonight before I left. God, who's being accused? Or what came out about someone? Oh, Ryan Seacrest.
Oh, yeah.
A stylist is accusing Ryan Seacrest, and he's, you know, insisting this didn't happen. But I don't know. It's, you're right. A Brave New World is a way to say it. But good for the women that are speaking up.
Oh, gosh, yes.
And telling their stories. And it will be interesting to see. And you know what? I know there's no way to figure this out now, but if the election was happening right now, if we were coming up on the election, would it change with what happened with President Trump? Because he had one of the most vile things ever. Audio of him talking about how able he would be to do things to women.
Right.
And a lot of people say he admitted he did it or he said he did it. I think he was bragging as if he had done it, but I don't know that he ever actually did any of those things.
And he excused it as locker room talk.
He said it was locker room talk and no locker room that I've ever been in.
Yeah,
no. And I've been in some vile locker rooms and I've not heard talk like that. Certainly not of anybody I'd ever vote for president. Yeah.
Now, how far in advance of the election did that take place? I'm trying to remember.
That was
2 weeks,
like
3 weeks?
No, I think it was way earlier than that.
It was.
I think was, I could be wrong, but I thought it was like June, July when that came out. Maybe I'm wrong. But he was Teflon Don. Nothing stuck.
Yeah.
But, you know, these things have been dogging Louis C.K. for years and never stuck. These things have been dogging Harvey Weinstein for years and never stuck. So I wonder if... Now, if those allegations had just come out now about Trump and that audio emerged about Trump now, in the light of everything else that's happened, would it stick differently?
No.
If we were just, you don't think so? You think even with all this else going on, they'd look at Trump and go, eh.
No. If we take everything about the election and the campaign as is, but just switch the time frame to his comments coming out now in the wake of everything that's been happening with the assaults and the sexual harassment, personally, I think he'd still pull off the Electoral College victory.
He'd still get those votes.
He would still get those votes, but because of the strategic placement of where those votes came that got him those Electoral College votes. Because remember, he got a ton of Electoral College votes. He was a big winner in that. And I think that however lucky he was or how brilliant the staff was that worked for him, whatever the reason, I think that in spite of even with that comment coming out now, given everything we know, I think he still would have strategically won the Electoral College.
Well, you very well may be right, and we will never know. All right, we got to catch up on some breaks before we turn it over to Max Norian for the morning show next on 720 WGN. They keep releasing Kennedy archives. A new batch was released just yesterday. New records first highlighted by the University of Virginia political analyst Larry Sabato describe what an FBI informant later told officials about Jack Ruby. Oswald shot and killed, of course, JFK on November 22nd, 1963. The interaction on the morning of the JFK assassination wasn't officially relayed to the FBI until March 1977. The informant was eventually revealed to be Bob Vanderslice of Dallas. Stated on the morning of the assassination that Ruby contacted him and asked if he would like to, quote, watch the fireworks. An FBI record dated April 6, 1977 says he was with Jack Ruby and standing at the corner of the Postal Annex building facing the Texas School Book Depository building at the time of the shooting. Immediately after the shooting, Ruby left and headed toward the area of the Dallas Morning News building. So new information makes it sound a little bit like Jack Ruby knew what was going on. You heard the tone. It's 5 in the morning. Time to say hello to WGN West and hopefully warmer than us here, Orion Samuelson. Good morning, O.
Well, good morning to you. And we're at 71 degrees right now in Scottsdale, Arizona, and maybe getting up into the lower 80s today.
Gorgeous. Gorgeous.
Come on out and join us. There's room at the pool.
I would like to, Orion. Actually, last night, Colleen and I and Jack were in the Jamesons in Del Webb Sun City.
Were you really?
We were.
And it I hope you asked, does Orion really eat here? Because they keep getting the question, And I always say, well, send them over to the table and I'll say hello, but haven't done that yet.
What's too funny is Colleen and I were talking about it. This is Orion's Jameson's. And then we're sitting there eating. And at the table next to us, over there is like six women. Is there a theater right near there? Because Grease is playing. So people are having dinner before they go to the show. And so there's a group of six women who apparently were going to see Grease. And I hear one saying, well, Orion Samuelson lives here in Sun City somewhere. This is the one he talks about. And I was like, wow, they're talking about Orion right there next to us. Who would have thought?
Well, I hope they treated you well. I know the food would be good.
It was very good. Believe you me, it was well worth it. Coming up next, the morning show with Big O. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn.